Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Protectors Portal podcast. I'm your host, Josh Waddell. Here at the portal, we invite police officers, firefighters, along with first responders and military veterans. We invite healthcare workers who work with these career fields dealing with traumatic events and PTSD. Today, our guest is Lieutenant Raymond Foster, LAPD, retired. Raymond Foster is a retired lieutenant of the Los Angeles Police Department, an author, and a college lecturer. He is also one of the leading authorities in law enforcement technology, police research, and counterterrorism strategies. He has appeared on the History Channel and radio programs in the United States and Europe as a subject matter expert in technological applications in law enforcement. He was interviewed by the London Independent in 2005 on the use of cellular telephone technology and explosive devices. Lieutenant Foster has published numerous articles in a wide range of venues, including magazines such as Government Technology, Airborne Law Enforcement Magazine, and Police One. His first book, Police Technology, is used in over 40 colleges and universities nationwide. Lieutenant Foster has two additional contracts with Prentice Hall to publish works on global terrorism and introduction to policing. As an overgrowth of his writing, he maintains two websites and acts as an editor of a monthly newsletter. Today, Lieutenant Foster will give the background of his law enforcement career. The lieutenant will share some of his stories with LAPD and shed some light on for those individuals wishing to start a career in law enforcement. Lieutenant, how are you doing this afternoon?
Fine, Josh. How are you, brother?
Not too bad. Hey, so today we're going to touch base with you. We're going to talk a little bit about your law enforcement career, and we're going to shed some light for those individuals who are wishing to start a career in law enforcement. And I know you can shed much light on that area as you had a long and prosperous career with the Los Angeles Police Department.
I did have a long career. It was very long.
So when did you start your career with LAPD?
Well, I went to the police academy in April of 1980, so that's, 35 years ago, then I worked in the department for 24 years.
You know, I don't want to make you feel old, but I was born in 81, so.
I don't feel old, I just look old.
Okay. What was it that made you start the career in law enforcement?
Well, my father was a police officer. In fact, he was a motorcycle police officer. And on the block that I grew up with on, there were probably half a dozen motorcycle police officers. And so I often say that I was raised by wolves. I was very familiar with the career and with the lifestyle in particular. And when I turned 19, it seemed like a natural thing to become, start the process. I mean, it just seemed like a natural flow for me based on how I was raised.
So you had an atmosphere that you grew up around. How long was your father a police officer for?
He was a policeman for 30 years and 6 months. And the reason he went an additional 6 months was that he had, when he got 30, because that's pretty much it, once you get 30 years, there's no financial benefit to staying any longer. The pension doesn't grow, anything like that. But he had to ride six more months on his motorcycle to get his 20-year riding pen. And so, and that has a diamond in it, actually a diamond chip. So he really wanted that 30-year, 20-year safe riding pen. So he stayed an additional 6 months. He was on the job 30 years and 6 months.
And he was with LAPD as well?
That's correct, yeah. As a matter of fact, I remember very early on, probably in some, I hadn't been out of a couple of months, and he was working night shift in central traffic. And the traffic bureaus in Los Angeles usually encompass four or five patrol divisions. And I was working Newton Division, which also is within that traffic bureau. And one night, I'm in the booking cage with some suspect, and they're across. And you can see all throughout this huge maze, I can see my father with another suspect. And I didn't, at that moment, well, what do I call him? Is it Dad? Is it Officer Foster? What do I say? And that was the first of many, many, many times that we had contact on the job. As a matter of fact, on his last night, working night, we got permission from my captain to actually work together. So we spent an entire shift in 77th handling radio calls and making traffic stops, and that was his last night.
What was your dad's last year of employment with LAPD?
I think 96. If we did the math, was it 96? It might have been 90, something like that. He went on in 62 or 63, so it might have been 92 or 93. As a matter of fact, it was before the Northridge. He retired just before the Northridge earthquake, which was in 92, so it would have been 91, I think, was his last year.
Okay. How long did you work as a patrol officer, just regular street patrol with LAPD?
I spent did my probation in Newton Division, which is a year, and then I went over to Southwest where I worked for about 6 years. After I'd been in Southwest for about 6 months, I took the test to be a training officer, and they made me a training officer. And then I had read the book The Blue Knight by Joseph Wamba, which is about a guy who walks a foot beaten downtown. And so I knew that I was probably going to be promoted to sergeant within a few years, so I had always wanted to walk a footbeat. So I transferred to Central Division in the late 80s, and I walked a footbeat and became king of 5th Street between Spring and Broadway on the swing ship.
So you became a sergeant around 1988, am I correct?
Yes, 88 or 89, right in there. I had a little over 8 years in the job. And I was promoted to sergeant from Central Division. So I spent 8 years as a street police officer in three really very busy divisions, and then was transferred to Southeast Division, which is, everybody would know that as Watts. I did my first year in Watts.
Okay. When you became, you got in that leadership position as a sergeant, how much different was that for you from going from patrol to sergeant?
Well, I think that's the biggest transition a police officer makes. You know, when in a large agency like Los Angeles Police Department, you always have a partner, particularly when you're a training officer. There's always somebody in the car with you. And then even though I was one of the first promotion cycles to actually go through sergeant school, as a 30-day school, they send you to learn to do the paperwork before I was promoted. When I was promoted, I was in the car by myself. That, number one, was a big shock because I had a partner for 8 years. The second was, of course, I'd been transferred to a brand new division, so I didn't know anybody or anything. And number three is I didn't realize I had the sergeant stripes on my sleeves most of the time for the first few months because I wasn't used to it. And so the transition is from becoming a worker bee or a doer to an observer. And an observer and a supervisor and a trainer and a mentor in tough transition. And, you know, cops typically fail at it in two ways. One is they become a policeman with three stripes, which, you know, they just go and do cop work, but they're a sergeant. Or they detach themselves from the cop work altogether and become, in essence, a tyrant that forgot what police work's like. And I think after a few months, and probably 6 or 7 months, I hit probably that middle road, whereas, you know, you're still responsible for a law enforcement function, but you're an observer. And I'll give you an example. Let's say some cops stop a car, a stolen car, or maybe it's a wonderful robbery, and you've got three or four cop cars behind it, and everybody's got their guns out. By about the sixth month, I'd be the third or fourth car on the scene. I'd be, of course, behind cover, but I wouldn't have my firearm out because once you pull the gun out, you're a participant, not an observer. You can't direct things with a firearm very well. And so I think once I had made that break where I was now responsible to make sure that they were safe and that they were doing everything that they could correctly, I think I became a better sergeant.
So how many years did you spend as a sergeant with LAPD? And when was your next – I guess I'll put this together. How many years did you spend as a sergeant with LAPD and your next promotion came along? What made you get that promotion or why did you want to advance further? So it's a two-part.
Okay, well, I was a sergeant for 10 years, and I was pretty, I was fat, dumb, and happy. I probably don't think I really wasn't eyeing promotion at all at that point. That was, I got pushed into being a sergeant. I didn't want to be a sergeant. Before the sergeant's test, there's a test that comes up, and an LAPD, between 700 and 1,000 people will test for sergeant. They're only going to make maybe 100 on a two-year list. The lists are good for 2 years. Maybe they make more than that, but a lot of people test, and I wasn't going to test. I really wasn't that interested. And then one of three sergeants pulled me into this old interview room and literally berated me for 2 hours on wasting talent and not taking the test and on and on and on. And then they conspired with my father, who at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday appeared at my door, picked me up, and drove me to Hollywood High School where I took the written exam. And I didn't study for it, and I did well. And I think that's, the sergeant's test is about supervising policemen. And if you know your job, the written test really isn't all that difficult. So I actually told my father, and I'm going to take the stripes because he was really pushing it. And I said, but I'll tell you this, if I don't like the job, I'm going back to being a policeman because this was not a goal of mine. This is not what I wanted. And for the first month or two, I seriously considered throwing in the towel on this job because this job sucks. But after I hit my stride and started to realize the good work I could do and started having fun with it, I stayed in a long time. So I've been there about 10 years. Towards about the seventh or eighth year, sixth year, I turned 33 years old. And I was celebrating my 33rd birthday with my best friend. And we were drinking, which is what you should do on your 33rd birthday. And she turns to me and she says, Alexander the Great conquered the known world when he was 33. Jesus died for your sins when he was 33. And Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence when he was 33. What are you going to do with your miserable life? And at that point, it really hit me really hard. And I started thinking about it, and the next day I signed up at college, because I'd never been to college, and I started my bachelor's degree. I ultimately worked through the doctoral process. I got a master's degree. And I started studying for the lieutenant's test. I said, okay, I'm going to make something out of this life. I've done having fun. And so I made lieutenant with it. I don't know, I had 18 years in the job, I think, at that time.
So you decided to retire, what was it, 2002?
Was it? I think it was 2004.
Okay. What made you, what was the determination to say, okay, I'm done, I've had enough of police work? What was the motivation behind the retirement?
Well, I don't think you can ever have police work, quite frankly. And I get asked this question, right now I do international consulting, so I travel all around the world, and when a client interviewed me for a job in the Caribbean, and the guy asked me, he said, well, you have this huge law enforcement career, it's like, doing it, and you have this huge academic career, which do you most identify with? And I said, look, if you can make me 22 years old again and put me back in a black and white, I'd sign up in a heartbeat. I mean, that was the most fun I ever had. And probably ever will have as an employee. And so, if I could stay there, that's a young person's job. If you could freeze frame in your 20s and early 30s and in a black and white, I'd do it forever. But you can't. You get older. You slow down. Also, as I started looking through the police department, at the rank of lieutenant, you can make lieutenant on in just about any organization through sheer will and elbow grease. Above that rank is very political. You still got to have some talent, but it's political. I didn't spend any time. I had no political allies. And I died on the captain's list twice and realized, it's not going to happen. And so I started thinking, I really want to make a bigger impact. I learned these skills through this program. Through college and studying and all this stuff. And about the same time, I, through a complete accident, get a book contract with Prentice Hall. And as it turns out, the influence of things that happened in the early part of 2004, number one, 24 years in the job. Number two is my wife had 20 years, which meant she was a retirement. My first book came out, and I got an offer to teach at a university. And so I thought, okay, now's the time to change tracks. And it made sense, and we did.
Well, do you ever recall, like, you spent a lot of time with LAPD, and it's not an easygoing city. I mean, we all know that. Do you ever recall, like, a traumatic event that stuck out the most to you during your career with LAPD?
Well, lots of traumatic stuff happened. I was during what you might call the cocaine wars, the crack cocaine wars of the early and mid-'80s. My first day on the job, I fixed my ride-along from the academy, fourth or fifth month, I mean, they sent you out on a ride-along, and you were in uniform with a badge and a gun, but you were the third person in the car. You sat in the back seat. And so it was my first ever on the street. First roll call, it was August. It was hotter than Satan's hooves. And the first call that came out was an ambulance shooting. And, of course, I didn't know any better. I thought somebody shot an ambulance. But what that means is that an ambulance has been dispatched to a shooting. And we got to the call at Jefferson and Central. And there must have been 400 or 500 people out on the street screaming and yelling. There were the three of us, get out of the black and white. There's a guy face down on the curb. There's just blood running like paint down the curb. The paramedics get there. They turn him over. They start CPR on this guy, and they throw the mask suit on him and an IV, and they just bundle him up. It's a snatch and grab because he's not breathing and his heart's not beating. And so one of the driver of the car, he turns to me, he goes, get in the back seat, or get in the back of the ambulance, and write down anything that man says. So I got in the back of the ambulance. I took this wild ride to California Hospital as they did CPR on this guy. Blood was splashing everywhere. And they roll him into the ER, and I stay right by the gurney side, and they roll him in there, and they're doing CPR. And it's a teaching hospital, so the guy, the surgeon says, okay, well, let's crack his chest and do an open heart massage. Now, I've never seen a dead body. I've never seen a gunshot wound. I've certainly never seen them pull a giant can opener out. And so they get this can opener out. Well, now they're still doing CPR on this guy, and they're, you know, the oxygen. And because they're going to, I guess, crack his chest, a nurse grabs the man's penis to insert a catheter. And as she inserts the catheter, this guy sits straight up, his eyes open. He grabs her by the wrist, and he says, what's your trip, bitch? And then he falls back down. And, you know, he's dead. And they crack his chest, massage his heart. And I wrote in my little field officer's notebook, which I have to this day, that was the man's dying words. That was my first day, first call on the job, and it didn't get any less intense after that.
Right. that's funny. You're still involved a lot, obviously, going around the world, talking to agencies, colleges, and what have you. So you still run into police officers and whatnot. Do you feel that you see a lot of new recruits probably coming in and out in law enforcement still? Do sometimes new police officers that are coming in, do they not take this job seriously? Especially just, you know, the story you just told, that's a serious event. It could be traumatizing for somebody that's just coming into this career field who's never seen a dead body, never seen blood. Do you think sometimes they do not take the job seriously? And then when something like that, like your story hits, it's like, wow, the oh shit factor sets in.
Oh, well, I don't think this generation is any different than my generation in many respects. I use this example. People change fairly slowly, and they're like ice. Think about a cube of ice. And the culture that we live in is like water. And so think of one culture as cold water and one culture as hot water, and you drop the same ice into the water, and it changes. One changes slowly, one melts more quickly, and so it reacts to the culture. So people haven't changed, but the culture certainly has changed. I couldn't be a policeman now. There's a bunch of us retired guys that, you know, work around each other, and I'd be arrested within 2 or 3 days. I mean, it's just the way it would work. I'd be fired. The things that went on in the rock and rule era of policing do not go on today. So the culture has changed. Not that much. Now, do they not expect that kind of thing to go on? I think if you go into a metropolitan agency and you end up in a high crime area, if you didn't expect that to happen, well, it's going to happen pretty quick. I mean, Detroit is essentially under siege with crime. Baltimore is under siege with crime. New York is not doing as well as they expect. There's still crime aplenty in Los Angeles. So if you go into a large area, you're going to be faced with those kinds of things. So I'm reticent to say that the people have changed, but the job has changed dramatically. And I think that a couple of things have happened to this culture. One is that the reliance on technology has there's some skills that have gone because people rely on technology too much. And as an example, you know, there was no automatic license plate readers. We didn't even have two-way radios. When I went on, believe it or not, we had two-way radios in the car, but not on your belt. You didn't have any kind of computer where you could run every plate. I mean, you had to learn how to spot a stolen car. And I think those kinds of skills are lost because we rely too heavily on technology. Are you still there, Josh?
I'm still here. I lost you for a second, but I got you back.
Okay, good.
Lieutenant, we hear the word complacency in our career field. I know when I went to the police academy, it was don't be complacent, because complacency can kill. You know, what advice do you have for newer officers coming in this career field about complacency, and how do you not let yourself get there?
Well, first off, you have to develop a good skill set. And I think that the basic tactics are what keep police officers alive. There are no high-speed Teflon-coated tactics that's going to keep your ass alive. It's all the basic stuff. And so when you knock on the door, you better not be standing in front of it. When you're interviewing somebody, you better be standing with your gun leg back. All the basic stuff should be ingrained in you. You know, you shouldn't go to your Uncle Joe's house and knock on the door for the family birthday party and not find yourself standing to the side of the door, because that just should be so ingrained in you. And where to stop the car, where people, you know, where to position your car, where to position yourself, the difference between cover and concealment, the idea of contact and cover when working with a partner, all those things should be second nature. And those are the things that keep police officers alive. And there's no high-speed, low-drag tactic or piece of equipment that will keep you alive. I also think that we've kind of cycled through. When I first started, you went to dinner, you know, we went to the break, and you parked in the parking lot at the restaurant, and you went inside and ate. When you came back out, before you got in the car, you looked under the car. You checked the back wheels because it was the cusp of the late 70s when they were bombing police cars and shooting up police stations all through the late 60s through the 70s and into the early 80s. And so you were trained to do that. I think we probably lost some of that basic stuff. I mean, if you're not looking into the car, every time you handle a call and you're away from the car, you should inspect the car before you get back in. Every contact should be treated with, you know, the tactical proficiency that will keep you alive. That should be second nature so that there is no complacency to the basics. Where police officers, the complacency comes in is when they start to take shortcuts, I think, you know, primarily with the handling of evidence or shortcuts in statements or shortcuts in their paperwork or things like that. Lastly, the thing that I see happen the most, and it's gone on for generations, is police officers at times tend to underreact. And every time you underreact, you end up having to overreact to regain control. So you see, and you know, you don't see these terrible-looking use of forces on, you know, YouTube. You generally don't see the beginning. But I'm going to tell you, I'll bet that 70 to 80% of the time, the police officer underreacted to the scenario causing them have to overreact to gain control. And what we see is the overreaction, which is always messy looking. So I guess there's three pieces of advice there. You know, the basics, you ingrain those basics on you. Number two is always react to the situation, and that sounds like two pieces of advice.
What steps for a person that wants to get involved in law enforcement or start a career in law enforcement, are there certain steps or things they can do to prep themselves or make sure this is what they want to do? Like, for an example, a ride-along criminal justice in college or joining the military prior to law enforcement?
Well, all of those are good ideas. What you want to do is, if I had to reapply today, one of the things that I would do is I would realize it's a year-long process. So let's say you want to go in right away when you're 21. Then you should start working on this process at the age of 16 or 17 in a variety of ways. You've talked about a ride-along. I think it's an excellent idea to gain some insight into what goes on. You can also go to the police station and just talk to the desk officer. I encourage people, things that look good in your background, and also provide you with more life skills and more experience as volunteer activities. So if you're 16, 17, 18 years old, there are plenty of opportunities to hear. Whether it's high school, you join one of the clubs or a service organization. If you're in, college is an excellent choice. I think that anyone who's 18, there ought to be two tracks for them. You either go to college or you go to boot camp, one of the two. Those are both excellent avenues for teaching you life skills, for maturing you rather quickly. But I think what you want to do is you want to focus on building your background so that when it comes time for that interview and they ask you what you've done to prepare yourself, which every interview board does, you can say, well, I began to volunteer, did the ride-along, I spoke to this person. I would even, you know, before the background, I'd investigate the police department. I'd go to the library or go online now and pull 6 months' worth of newspaper for the local paper and find out what's going on in that police department. I would become very thoroughly familiar. And those are things I talk about to show interest to get that higher score so that you're able to go in. Is that police academies, the physical fitness required for a police officer is physical fitness enough to get you through the academy so that you don't sustain injury. That level of physical fitness acquired generally, although it's encouraged, after the academy. That's why you see fat cops or cops that are out of shape. But it's required for the academy. So the one thing I get asked all the time, what should I do? Well, there's two things. Number one is you need to work on your legs and you need to work on your lungs because they're going to run you and you've got to do lots of stuff like pushing, pulling, and jumping that are the legs, you know, 180-pound dummy out of a car and pulling it, whatever it is, 25 or 30 feet. That's all in the legs. That's not upper body. So legs and lungs, keep yourself physically fit. You clean your background up and look good, and I think that that's a way to get in the door.
Okay. You mentioned that earlier in the podcast. You mentioned that your wife was 20 years in the law enforcement career field as well.
She was.
Okay. So, regardless, I mean, you're a special circumstance because, you know, it's not all the time that we see two cops that are married that work at the same agency or whatnot. But we have, you know, the male half or the female half, whatever it is, that works at the in the career field of police work. And it's difficult marriage-wise. Do you have any advice for married couples that, you know, one or the other works in the career field?
I'm fairly certain that there are a number of people that will tell you I'm the last person you want to ask for. however, because I had to learn all this stuff the hard way. So people know me, and I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, but it was learned the hard way. I learned everything the hard way. And which means I made lots of mistakes and did lots of boneheaded stuff. But what I learned to do that was very helpful to me, and I do this to this day, I think when you're in a high-stress job, you have to give that occupation a briefing and a debriefing every day. And what I learned to do finally, and it was probably about my 15th or 16th year, on the way to work, I would begin to, that whole process of driving in was my planning my day, going over everything I was going to do that day, the things I wanted to accomplish. It was getting in the right mindset to work. And on the way home, what I did was I reviewed the entire day. I debriefed the entire day out loud, talking to myself in the car, things I did that were good, things that I did I could do better, things I did that were just plain stupid. And what it helped me to do was not bring the, by the time I got home from a 30, 45-minute commute, by the time I got home, I had washed the day out of me pretty much. I'd reviewed it honestly. I wasn't carrying that burden back into the house. And I think that was very helpful to change gears. Because, you know, you're the police work, I mean, it's a 24/7 occupation, and that's very true. However, if you're not careful, you know, that heightened sense of awareness that serves you very well 8 to 10 hours a day doesn't serve you very well when you're home. So I really encourage people. That's the one thing I think was most helpful for me was to mentally gear up on the way in and then mentally wind down on the way out. And those things probably made life a lot smoother for me and those around me.
Okay, so you've given us a vast amount of information and a lot of useful tips, but is there one thing from during this podcast that you may not have mentioned that you would love to pass along to individuals that are getting ready to start a career in law enforcement?
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to be a good cop, there's only one thing you've got to learn to do, and there's just one thing. And if you can learn to do this one thing very well, you'll be the best. And what people don't realize is the police work has not changed. I don't care what it is, but it hasn't changed for 200 years. Police work's about talking to people. It's about getting information from victims and witnesses and suspects. It's about being able to talk to the heroin addict who's on the nod, to the CEO of a corporation, and being able to relate to them and get information, create quick bonding with them. And so it's about talking to people. The more people you talk to, the more information you get, the better you get at it. So one of the things that, and I'll give you an example, one of the things I would do every night was pick up 3 or 4 addicts, heroin addicts, who are on the nod. I'd do the schematics of their arms, book them in for 11-5-50, and then Sunday night, now that they've been in jail for 48 hours, I'd go back into the holding area, pull them out one at a time, and I'd have coffee and cigarettes and a chocolate bar and start to talk to them. And I'd ask them, you know, so who's carrying weapons, who's got narcotics, who's got lots of money, who's wanted, who thinks they're wanted, who did this, who did that. You have to talk to people to get information. That's how you solve crimes. That's how you become aware of what's going on around you. So the most important thing is your communication skills. They're more important than the tactical skills. They're more important to being a cop than any physical skills. It's your ability to talk to people. So that's what, if I had advice to pass on, talk to lots of people, learn to communicate with people from all segments of society, and learn to listen.
Well, I want to thank you because I know you're a really busy guy, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Well, you're most welcome. The only thing you did was put my lunch off another 45 minutes, and I'm really sitting there thinking about what I'm going to eat. So, but Josh, I wish you well. I know this podcasting thing is a difficult but a very valuable medium that puts out information that people just can't get elsewhere. So good luck to you, and I wish you the best with it.
Yeah, we thank Lieutenant Foster, LAPD, retired, for coming on the Protector's Portal today. I will put his book on the, or books, I should say, on my Amazon A store located at my website, nevergiveupsolutions.biz. And you can follow the lieutenant on Twitter at police officer. Is that correct, sir?
That's right. Just at police officer, and we're good to go.
Okay. And also you can follow me on Twitter at NGUSolutionsNet. NGUSolutionsNet. Lieutenant, you have a great afternoon. It was enjoyable having you on the podcast today, and thank you for coming on, sir.
Take care, brother.
You got it.